It is time right now to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast Arthur during the week after the noontime hour news and also on the weekend. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning and happy almost Thanksgiving.
I have to thank you, though, for the past over the past month, you've talked about making beans and also about making short ribs. I tried your recipe both times, what you said to do.
I'm totally stuck on short ribs.
I'm telling you.
How did you make the short ribs?
I salted, peppered them.
Yeah.
In a pot, I put some tomato paste, all right, and a little bit of red wine. I then filled it up to just about, not quite to the top of the short ribs, with chicken soup mixture, very light chicken broth.
You didn't brown the short ribs first?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That's the first thing I did. And then I just put it on 325 for about 4 hours. Holy smokes.
Well, I must say, short ribs are amazing meat.
Oh my God!
and that sounds really delicious. And in fact, maybe I am inspired because I have some really extraordinary tomato paste and a half a bottle of red wine on the counter here. So that sounds like maybe I have to go out and buy some more short ribs. But excuse me, this is the end of a cold. It always settles in my chest. Anyway, I did find some great. I mean, I don't know why they're all on special sale lately, but I mean, $5 a pound doesn't sound like a sale on a cut like short ribs, but in fact it is. And I find that 3 pounds of short ribs, even with those big bones, so we're talking $15 worth of meat, is enough to serve 4 people. Or 2 people twice, which is this household. But I did have some friends coming in for coming over for lunch on Saturday, and I had a totally different menu in mind. But when I got to the supermarket, I couldn't resist those short ribs. However, I wanted to make them in a Neapolitan-style ragu. You know, ragu in Italian means meat sauce. And what Italian Americans call gravy is ragu or raù. There's so many dialectical ways of saying this, but a ragu is most of the time, not 100% of the time, based on tomatoes and meat. Whether it's a bolognese style ragu, which bolognese is ground meat. And has very little tomato, but it does have carrot, onion, celery, and usually some wine, and often broth, and the real classic old one even has milk. But the main thing is meat. So I always make, I shouldn't say always, but I most often make my Neapolitan-style ragu with a pork product. I would say that the ultimate ragu in Naples in the last 25 years is a ragu made with brajol, with beef rolls that are stuffed. And so it is a beef ragu. You can mix meats too. Italian-Americans, of course, because they didn't have any meat back in the homeland, when they saw how easy it was to get meat in America, and we are a meat culture, they put all kinds of meat in their ragu, meatballs, sausage, spare ribs, brajol, as Italian-Americans call it, brajol. That's 4 meats right there. But I made one just with short ribs and my 3 pounds of short ribs. And the most classic Neapolitan style has nothing in it but tomatoes, meat, some onion, no herbs, and wine. And the wine can vary. I happen to have open bottle of very gutsy red wine, a Nero d'Avola from Sicily, and I used that, which I do think helped the sauce. It does matter what kind of wine you use, but don't go out of your way to buy an expensive wine, just one that has a little guts to it. I think my Nero d'Avola costs like $13 or $14 a bottle, which is not not expensive these days. Anyway, so what I did was I do in the Neapolitan style, you do not brown the meat on its own to give it a nice caramelized surface from one of it's actually not caramelized, but whatever, brown surface. And no, Neapolitans put the meat in the pot along with the onion. So the moisture from the onion actually prevents the meat from totally encrusting over. It does get a little bit brown. So you do that. Put for my 3 pounds of meat, I used one medium onion, diced. Put that all in my a large casserole, 5-quart, I guess it is, casserole, Dutch oven, if you want to call it that. You don't have to worry about the meat being separate, you know, a few pieces at a time, because it's not going to brown anyway. But you do this over, I would say, medium-high to high heat. You don't want anything to brown to burn, so be careful. Depends on your pot a lot. I happen to have a really heavy pot, so it's not so easy to burn things. In any case, a cast iron pot is very good for this. You know, Le Creuset or any other manufacturer, there's so many these days, that kind of a pot is great. So that's it. Once the onion and the meat is well colored, but it won't be brown, add your wine. And for my 3 pounds of meat, I must have used 1 cup of this gutsy red wine. And I let that cook in the open pot over still medium-high-high heat until it's nearly evaporated. And then I put in 2 28-ounce cans of San Marzano tomatoes. Now, they've gotten very expensive, and I didn't look this up, but I have a hunch they actually may have an extra tariff now. A lot of food products, I think Parmigiano, Mr. Trump has put, he probably doesn't like it, so he put a new tariff on Parmigiano. But anyway, that's it. Now, the tomatoes, I crush with my hand in a bowl. You can put them through a food mill. I didn't want to get another thing to clean. And I do like, and it cooks so long, truthfully, even though you get more texture by crushed tomatoes than you do with put through the food mill, it's still a pretty smooth sauce at the end. Although some meat flecks off into it. So, anyway. So that's it. Marshall, instead of putting it on top of the stove, I put mine in the oven sometimes. I did not do that with the Neapolitan ragu because I wanted to make it so classic, and hardly anything goes in the oven in Naples because in the old days nobody had an oven. So, you know, they were communal ovens. But you always had a burner to cook on. So you want this to cook extremely slowly. I mean, pop, like that. And I have what's called a heat diffuser. So even on low, on my medium burner, the one that had a diameter suiting the pot, I still needed the heat diffuser to keep it that low. And it did take 4 hours, or close to 4 hours. For the meat to become, in this case, I just want the meat to be so succulent and falling apart at the touch of a fork. If you are, I like to cook this a day ahead, though. So actually, I take it off the heat just before that, and I take the meat out of the pot. And first, I refrigerate the whole thing. Or not, actually, depends on how much fat you think there is. I always select my short ribs for the pieces that are not so fatty. Anyway, this is not a Thanksgiving dish, but I am tempted. Huh. Because it was a huge, the meat was unbelievable. And I still have sauce from Saturday. I still have more sauce, so you get a bonus of that. We did not eat pasta first, which is what you would do. Normally, a normal Neapolitan would have that sauce on ziti and eat the meat separate with vegetables. We ate the meat separate with vegetables, which I'll get to in a minute. But instead, I was trying out a recipe for Thanksgiving on my friends, who I knew would be understanding if it wasn't so great. But I made this a few years ago for my, I think it had to be for my family, and it had to be on Thanksgiving, butternut squash gnocchi. But I remember them not being a big hit, so I haven't made it since. But I had this big butternut squash, 4-pound squash, and I was going to do something else with it. And the last minute I said, you know, let me try this, because we're having company for Thanksgiving, it's a little bit of a performance, because I'm sure my nephew told them, these are his friends, that his uncle, the cook, is going to cook. So I got to make something that's a little bit wow. And I thought they were wow when I made them the last time. But this time, I decided it's a different audience, and they're more sophisticated, so they might appreciate them better. And it's not a hard thing to do for Thanksgiving, because it's something you could do ahead. So let me start with, you roast the squash. I just split it in half lengthwise, scoop out the seeds, put it in a baking dish with a skimming of water, and put it in a 400-degree oven until it's tender, depends on the squash. Could be a half an hour, could be 45 minutes. The way you know it's done is you take a point of a knife and insert it in the neck part very, very easily, then it's done. The bulbous part that contains the seeds gets done before the neck part does. Clear my throat. Anyway, so that's it. Then you let it cool, scoop it out, and puree it in the food processor. You really want a smooth puree. Put that in a strainer over a bowl and let it drip. It needs a good 12 hours at room temperature to drip. So this is something you would do on Wednesday. Wednesday morning, you wake up, you roast the squash, you puree it, and you put it up to drip. And then before you go to sleep at night, on Wednesday night, you can put it in the refrigerator, and then by the time you wake up, it will be fully dripped. I like, during the period where it's sitting on the counter at room temperature, I do like to take a rubber spatula and flip it once or twice. So over 12 hours, maybe you flip it twice. Just so that, you know, because all the moisture goes to the bottom, but then quite a lot of water will come out. The beginning water will actually be a pretty color because it's an orange. By the way, butternut squash loaded with vitamin A and vitamin C. One cup provides more than one day's requirement of both of those. Anyway, you let it drip, and then you let it drip more, and when you're ready to make the gnocchi, measure it. For each 2 cups, because I'm going to be making more than 1 squash's worth of gnocchi, because we're 9 adults and 5 children. Who knows if the children will eat this, but it's attractive, so maybe they will. On the other hand, my great nieces don't like to eat, as my niece would say, anything with leaves. So this has sage butter on it. I'll have to pick off the sage. No, I'll let them pick off the sage. Anyway, you mix into 2 cups of this drained puree, 1 egg, which you've beaten a little bit beforehand so that it mixes in well, 3/4 cup of flour, a teaspoon, it could be a rounded teaspoon of salt, and about 3/4 teaspoon of freshly ground pepper. Could be black pepper, white pepper, whatever pepper you have handy. And I like a good 1/4 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg. You beat that up all together, and it will be a thick batter. But you can say, how do I make gnocchi out of this? This is the only hard part about this dish. It requires a little technique, and it may take you one batch to, not the whole squash, but you'll see. You bring a pot of water to a boil, but not a rolling boil, just a steady, nice, simmery boil. And you drop this batter into the boiling water by scooping it up with a teaspoon and using another teaspoon, going back and forth between the two spoons until you get a sort of oval gnocco. Let that drop into the water. You probably have to use one spoon to get it off the other spoon. And you drop at least 8-10 of these in, I would say 10 is a good number, of these in the water at a time. And when the water, when the gnocchi, you'll see, the first one will rise to the top soon after you finish putting in the last one. But wait until they all rise to the surface of the water, and they will. And if they're not, then increase the heat. The only thing, you know, you really have to be conscious of here is your heat. You may want to be adjusting it up and down, up and down. But you want that steady boil, but without rolling. And you, once all the gnocchi have come to the surface, let them cook for 3 minutes. I time it. That's it. That's pretty much it. And yes, some of the gnocchi batter will come off in the water, but don't worry about that. And you kick these up after 3 minutes. Could even be 4 minutes. Smaller ones, 3 minutes. If your technique produces bigger ones, I don't know. You're going to have to judge this. You might judge this by doing a couple of sample ones, and let's say two, and take one out after it's been on the surface for 3 minutes, and with a slotted spoon, and then take out the other one after 4 minutes, and you tell me which one you like better. You put these, as they get done, on a very slightly buttered baking sheet or in a pan. I have a beautiful gratin pan, a copper one, that I put mine in, so it's a great presentation. But if you don't have one and you want to put them in serving dishes or just put them on plates individually, a rimmed baking sheet is just fine. I take like not even a tablespoon of butter and rub it on the bottom, and as soon as you start putting the hot gnocchi in on the pan, the butter will melt enough that they stay, you know, they don't stick to the pan, is the point. Anyway, you should end up, I would say you're going to do 4 batches, and you should end up with about 36, about 3 dozen of these gnocchi. And when they're all done, put them in whatever pan you're going to bake them in the oven. It could be that baking sheet. And separately, make your sage butter, which goes over them. Just take a sprig of sage, 8-10 leaves of sage, put them in a little pan with 4 tablespoons of butter, and let the butter melt and the sage sizzle in the butter for 2 or 3 minutes at the most. Turn off the heat. You can let it sit until you're ready to bake these. Now, you can make these even the day ahead if you have refrigerator room to put them on a baking sheet. If you don't, you can make them on, have everything ready to roll on Thursday morning and make them Thursday, and then let them sit at room temperature. You just put a piece of plastic over it. And just before you put them in a 350-degree oven, pour over your sage butter. With or without the leaves, the butter will now have the sage flavor. If you have children at your table that don't eat leaves and that may be turned off by the whole thing if they see a leaf, then you can strain out the leaves. Otherwise, I like the leaves. They look pretty, green leaves on orange gnocchi. And I think the kids are going to be interested in orange gnocchi. I hope. And if not...
with all that work, they better... with all that work, they better be.
Well, it's not that much... You know, I made it sound like a lot of work, but it's actually not. I mean, roasting squash, I mean, that's unattended. Then you puree a food processor, that's not a lot of work.
No,
and then it sits for an entire day before you have to continue with the recipe. By the way, I love butternut squash. I think butternut squash is very underrated these days because there are so many other squash in the market that all look so pretty from their shells, winter squash, that people are buying them instead of butternut squash, which I have seen go down in price just in the last few weeks. I think I paid 79 cents a pound the other day, and it's, sometimes it's like $1.50 a pound. And I think it may be because nobody's buying butternut squash, so they're reducing the price, and they will. But I just love it pureed. You give me a plate of butternut, a pureed butternut squash with a dab of butter on top, and I'm in heaven. It's almost as good as mashed potatoes, yeah, maybe better.
And
the other way
squish
is roasted. I used to, and I haven't done this in a while. And you can't make every vegetable roasted, please. But you know, butternut squash does work very well. Toss it with olive oil and salt and pepper and put it on a roasting pan, 400 degrees for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. By the way, the gnocchi cook in a 350-degree oven for 20 minutes. So 20 minutes before, and I would serve these as a first, and then you take them out of the oven and sprinkle them heavily with Parmigiano. I used 3/4 cup of Parmigiano for my batch of 36 gnocchi. And the cheese will, of course, melt almost immediately because it's a hot pan, and it's divine. And I wasn't sure if I was going to make this. That was all started, but it was a sensation on Saturday. My friends thought they were sensational. So I guess I'm making it for Thanksgiving.
I hope that wasn't a Mercury retrograde. I have a quick question to ask.
Mercury retrograde has been horrible to me, but it's over, you say, on Thursday.
On Wednesday. You don't listen sometimes.
No, you said Thursday.
No, I said Wednesday at
2 o'clock.
All right,
well, I'm glad it's Wednesday.
So, but here's my very basic question.
Yeah.
When you do, at the beginning, when you do roast your butternut squash, and the skimming of water, face up or face down? After you split it.
Oh, face down.
Okay.
Meaning the cut side down.
That's what I...
By the way, I have no objection to cooking this in a microwave. It's one of the few things I do think to sometimes use the microwave. I mean, if my oven was busy and... but, you know, it doesn't have to be a 350 oven either. You can put the squash in any temperature the oven happens to be with other things if
right.
you want.
Okay.
But it also... I don't know how long... I can't tell you how long it takes in the microwave. It definitely depends on the squash. Do remember to use a microwave-safe Pyrex dish, not a metal pan.
And you do need to know, I mean...
Face down, because I don't want it to color or anything.
Right.
I just want it to cook, yeah.
Yeah, no, but that was actually a question. And you have to talk to Marshall...
No, it's a good question.
...about microwave technology. Yeah, I've never been much... You can't just throw things in a microwave and go, yeah, it's fine. The whole cooking from the inside out is a totally different notion.
That's not true. It does not cook from the inside out.
See?
Sorry. That is a 30-year-old myth.
All right. There you go.
Yeah. The definitive book on this is Barbara Kafka, may she have a good poker game in heaven, wrote a book on... she was much maligned for doing this because she was a very... serious food person, and you would never have considered the microwave one of her tools. But she spent a couple of years playing with the microwave and wrote a definitive microwave cookbook. And I guess I could have looked up how long she tells me to cook a whole 4-pound squash. My guess is it shouldn't take more than 15 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe less.
And you cook it whole?
I don't know. I don't use my microwave in that way.
And you cook it whole?
I don't know. I would, again, split it.
Okay.
Take the seeds out.
Right, of course.
Yeah, because, I mean, whole is...
ridiculous. Stupid once you...
Well, it's too long and you're going to end up pureeing this anyway.
Right.
You know,
when you say no...
And you don't have to peel, of course. You don't have to peel the squash that is cooked either in the microwave or in the oven until it's soft because you just scoop it out with a spoon.
Right. No, it's
and leave the peel behind.
That is a piece of cake.
Makes the process a lot easier.
When you mentioned gnocchi, I think of many years ago as a kid, there was a restaurant called Tony's in Torrington, run by two Polish brothers, and they used to make potato gnocchi. But then there's a restaurant around here that makes goat cheese gnocchi, and that is Saravan. and it's really, really good.
I just I like gnocchi, but
the best
I would say
gnocchi?
90% of the time they're, you know, they're too stodgy for
and
me.
The most perfect
but
gnocchi.
These are not, because these are made with butternut squash, well trained.
Ever...
Now there is flour in them, and the fact is, once when they're boiled and you take it and you taste it, you're probably going to taste a little bit of that starchy flour.
Good.
But once they're baked, you won't.
Okay.
What I'm having you taste them for initially is texture, not flavor. The flavor will improve, of course, with sage butter and Parmesan cheese.
what doesn't?
Arthur, you see, you just proved my point.
Yeah.
The people that love this Impossible Whopper, the Impossible Burger Whopper.
Yeah.
If you were to give them that burger without all the Whopper stuff that goes with it,
oh,
they would know it was a not a hamburger. It's such a
right.
sham.
Right.
No. You know, I hope you remember I went
yes.
just for the sake of this program because I needed to do the research, and that's exactly what I said. I mean, it could be a piece of whatever.
It could be shoe leather.
With all the stuff that's on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
so
cheese and mayonnaise and what, I don't know what all they put on it, but... believe me, I'm not a big fan of fast food burgers, as you can imagine. I will eat fast food chicken. Even we'll have a fried chicken sandwich if we have to go to Burger King. But I just saw on TV last night that Kentucky Fried Chicken is all these places are reducing their prices. They have a 2 for $6 mix and match. At Kentucky Fried Chicken, and at the first what's it called that Chick-fil-A, the first Chick-fil-A just opened in Brooklyn. I wonder how it's going to do here.
And the last time we talked about fast food chicken,
you know, the politics are not Brooklyn politics.
You're right, exactly.
Yeah, and people in Brooklyn tend to spend their money according to their politics.
Yes, I've noticed. Yes, and talk about it or write about it or post about it.
Oh, whatever. You know, I've been telling this story a lot, but I went to a dinner at the Montauk Club, which is this private club across the street from me, and it's a magnificent building, late 19th century Venetian Gothic building, and a neighbor invited me to dinner there. It was a big... Don't ask. Anyway, I'm at the dinner table, and you know, just chit-chat, and you're in Park Slope, so you feel like you're safe. And I said something about a new congressman from Brooklyn and Staten Island, Max Rose. I don't even think it was complimentary to Max Rose. But the couple sitting next to me said, "Be careful with politics here, because we're Republicans." I said, "Oh, my God, Republicans in Park Slope, how do you manage?" He said, "We don't tell many people."
That's right.
But they told me, and I was a stranger, but I guess I seemed safe. Or maybe it was because I had maybe something negative to say about a Democratic congressman.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, I do admire. This is, you know, months later. I've changed my mind about Max Rose.
All right,
it's right. So now, what else? Vegetables. So I'm apparently in charge of vegetables for Thanksgiving, it sounds like. So I'm now going to, this week, I'm going to work on some mushroom thing. I think I already tried a mushroom bread pudding made with brioche. That appeared in the New York Times. I went through this, I'm sure, on the air. I didn't like it. Let me just say, I think the recipe needs some work. And plus, I don't think you can use any old brioche. But I like the idea. So maybe I'll make a mushroom dressing.
Aha.
All right. We will.
Bye.
Bye. I'm hungry. Thank you.
Have a great week.
You too.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.